You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, today we're speaking to Temuho about his business, which is Buhlweki Enterprises, and he'll be sharing some of the lessons that he has learned along the way in his entrepreneurial journey, and I believe he's already on the line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Dr. Temuloy.
How are you today?
No, my brother, by God's grace, we're alive and kicking.
Ah, fantastic. You sound like you've got money when you say we're alive and kicking. Sounds really good.
thank you for the blessing. When the man of God is spoken,
I'll let it speak. People who've got money, like we're alive and kicking, like that's when you know there's money here, you know?
We're trying that.
We're trying. That's really good. How was your day?
No, my brother, it was a busy day, but
yeah,
God's grace, we were able to get things done.
Ah, fantastic!
It's quite hot. It's quite hot these days.
Yes.
Stable these days,
which is quite strange for Lesotho. Hey, it's hot.
That's the thing. The thing. You see, the times are changing.
Sure.
Now it's really, really quite strange, but we would be expecting to be getting at least a certain level of cold.
Yeah.
But the weather is really shooting to above your 30 degrees.
So yo. And normally what would be the weather patterns around this time of February?
Well, ideally it's still summer.
Okay.
But I mean, you don't have the extreme hot weather. Yes. Temperatures like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're having your type of weather now, like your plus 35 degrees later.
Sure.
We would have roughly your 25 and it's cold. But it's actually quite profound. It's not in the central area, it's not as cold as in the rural areas, like
okay.
In the mountains.
Yeah.
In the mountains there it snows, it gets terribly cold. But
sure.
But in the inverse it would be cool. Let me put it this way, you know.
Oh, that's lovely. I mean, for my own interest there, you know, just thinking about this, Lesotho, where can I go? In December, I didn't have the heart to. I was like, yay, okay, let me go back from the border. But for people who might be interested, and I know we're going to be talking about this, you know, as part of my show tomorrow on the places that one can go to in Lesotho. But when you say mountainous areas, you just reminded me, I know there's really nice mountainous places to visit in Lesotho.
No, definitely. There are a couple of interesting places that you could visit in Lesotho. I think, humbly speaking, it depends what you're driving.
Ah, yeah, you're quite correct there.
Depending on the experience you want to have, of course. But yes, so you'd want to at least have a 4x4.
Yeah.
The Sunny Pass, that's quite a interesting place. That's when you're coming down from the Natal area.
Okay.
And then you can actually see the Drakensberg.
Yes.
And probably even get to see our highest point. Actually, ooh, we have the highest mountain in Southern Africa.
Yeah.
So that's another point that you could see. So it even actually snows.
Sure.
That side.
Look at that. Yes, that's really amazing. That's really amazing. I mean, I need to. Next time I'm going to pass the board, I tell you the truth. And get locked in. And once get in, they can't take me back. You know, it's one of those things. I must tell them, Kimuloi, Kilholokwe. So you know, the moment I get there and I say Kilholokwe, I know all the doors will be open, swung open. Like, yay! You know?
That's also true. One of your idioms is,
yeah. Exactly. That's why wherever we go, but to babulatsela nje, like, hey, these guys, you know. So that's exactly what we do. So that's what I'm saying. I'm definitely going to come visit there. But today we're talking about you. It's not about me and your business. Can you tell us a little bit before we get into your business about yourself, man? What brought you into this industry? Did you always want to become a business person? Where were you born? What was it like?
I think that's quite an intriguing question, my brother. But you know, they always say there's a statement that is you always see God's hand when you look back. When I look at how far well that I've come so much in my life, I realize that I had a lot of influence from a business environment.
Okay,
from my grandfather and my grandmother, and they've been in the way in your traditional businesses when I grew up. So I used to be there when Hobala stock or when so that I think subconsciously just plants a seed, you know, in you when you grow up. You know? But initially, all of my high school life, I really never thought I wanted to be in business. I actually fell in love with business when I got to varsity.
Okay,
but when I look back, I actually realized that I was born in a business family. My dad is also still in business. Professional. In a different space, but I think when you just realize that certain things have an impact on you subconsciously when you as you grow, you know. So I think I want to give it to my background, my upbringing, that there was a large impact on it regarding that.
Fantastic. Family playing a very important role. So what exactly does your business do, if you were to just define it for our listeners as well?
Okay, so basically what we do, we're a waste management company.
Okay.
And then we've obviously discovered and are working on a sustainable way of recycling waste. Okay. And we don't only recycle the waste, but we actually process it into valuable products. So our main product right now is we actually process waste tires, like your cycle them into fuel, and we actually sell the fuel back to you guys in South Africa.
Ooh, that's really amazing. Okay,
we actually sell the fuel back to you. So so we sell the fuel back to South Africa, but it's used for various things. It can be refined to other, but that's basically what we do in a nutshell. So our main aim is obviously just to foster sustainability and economic growth, because ideally we have about 51 suppliers. These are these are your fire shops and your bottom of the pyramid, or let's say informal tire shops. These are direct clients, so that means we literally buy tires from these people. So that means, like, ideally more than about 500 families have food on the table, because we actually bring them value on a day. Apart from obviously the your big enterprises, like your big tire shops, that have an environmental obligation to dispose tires, but the rest would actually exchange for cash.
Ah, fantastic! And when did this start? And ideally, did you study anything around waste management, or is just a love that you developed?
I don't think I have studied anything towards. I did become strategic. I'm a fully commercial person. But I think what I can say to you, my brother, is and by default, this is an Adventist and a Christian radio station, is that I always go with the verse that really says, "Those that seek shall find."
You know?
When I was in varsity, when I came, that's when, like I said, I had fall in love with business and wanted to do business. So I always had this in me that, Lord, can I find something that I can do back home that can sustain me, that I can compete fairly in? You know, I would always and to not to mean any prejudice, I always say, but God, Muslims and Islams have businesses. White people have businesses. They dominate industries. Why can't we? You know, that was always a personal prayer that I had. And that's when I started seeking. I started doing research, and then that's when I came about with the idea. So it's, if it started from an idea stage, that means that the idea literally started almost 9 years ago in 2014 when I was. So it's just amazing what God can do when we keep seeking.
You're
finding till it actually becomes a reality. You know what I mean?
And one would say perhaps you can make money in both ways here, because you can make money from just the waste itself, the tires, right? But you can also make money from beneficiating and creating fuel, like you're saying, and trying to bring the two together. How easy was that?
No, it was a nightmare. I must admit, a nightmare because, I mean, first of all, barriers to entry were a bit of a challenge.
Yeah,
I'm not bringing the race card, but that's also something we. But you're getting into a very white dominated industry, you know, and even the cost of CapEx is terribly high.
Mm.
There's also serious skills that were, like technical skills that I had to employ, you know. Mm. That was another difficulty that came about, but I think the merging of that there's a incubation program that I've been working with recently.
Yes.
So I think that there was a bit of a gel for me, because now you know, people start understanding the value that you're doing to society. Because my direction for the longest time was just to ensure I'm breaking even.
Yeah.
I'm covering my costs. Yeah. The business is running.
Yeah.
But then when you now understand that it's bigger than you, in a sense that the sustainability part, that's when you start actually merging now the cost and getting people to voluntarily want to pay for that service. You know what I mean? Because especially established companies, because now they need to understand that they have an obligation to they produce the waste anyway. But I'm just saying, I think with assistance from such networks, that's when I think I was able to gel the two. But honestly speaking, from the start, for the longest time in my business, I was just focusing on breaking even.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
making the posts run, you know.
Yeah.
Now it's an issue of involving other people and stakeholders to know that every time you leave your tire there by train tire, you're actually feeding, you know, not only feeding some, you're cleaning the economy at large.
That's
the direction that. But obviously, like I said, there had to be help to adjust.
Yes.
Perspective.
Ah, fantastic. We want to just unpack that in just a little bit as we continue with this conversation as well, because I find that quite interesting. And also given the fact that the world is moving to much more cleaner energy, you know, I'm just thinking in my mind, how do you or how have you, especially as a person who's a strategic person and, you know, very strategic in thinking and in training as well, you know, incorporating that, because the world is moving to much more cleaner fuel. How is the company then moving towards that? But before I get into that, what do you think makes your business different from all the others out there, which are waste management companies?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Sorry, I'd lost you for a bit.
Sorry about that. I was saying that I want us to explore a little bit around the issue of the fact that the world is going green and into cleaner fuel, right? Mm-hmm. And just how you, especially being a strategic person by training and by the business that you do as well, how have you guys incorporated that into the future of the business? So we'll talk about that just now. But what I was asking is, what makes you different from all the other waste companies in Lesotho and perhaps even in the Southern African you know, part of this beautiful African continent?
No, I think obviously I will get back to the point that you were raising.
Yeah.
But I think the first thing is obviously with the first move advantage that we are actually beneficiating the waste, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
Actually creating value out of the waste.
Yeah.
That's the first part that actually helps us differentiate us in the market. And then I think secondly, we're young, you know, and that also creates opportunity for growth and you want to participate with the young fellow, and that's doing good for the economy at large. And I think lastly, we had the first mover advantage. We literally were the first people that are actually processing and dealing with this particular type of waste. You know? People dealing with plastic, the other people dealing with steel, but we're actually the ones specifically processing tires. And I think also on your question of the world moving green, I think that's exactly where our competitive advantage is. Our fuel is green. If you look at it from hindsight, our fuel is actually a reuse of what was ideally a waste product.
Mm-hmm.
So that means we're actually creating a green fuel, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And it may actually be used for various other aspects.
Yeah.
We sell it to South Africa, but They can use it to actually use it as a heating fuel. They can use it to do other components. They use it also as a form of creating explosives in the mines. So there's various inputs, but just as a petroleum product, it's actually a green fuel because we are beneficiating it from fuel, as opposed to the actual way that it would have been extracted. As that would be actually polluting. So actually our edge is actually the fact that we are a waste management company that creates green fuel.
I love that. And again, it's I love that it's your competitive advantage and kind of opens up opportunities then from that point of view. And first mover advantage, when are you like a Donald Trump, you know, those people who had first mover advantage and Warren Buffett and all, that's why you can tell Chaltating. It's just that you're becoming modest, which is good. You must be modest around such things, you know. But first mover advantage is really, really critical. I think for anyone who's an investor, they want businesses that have that. Because then you can leverage that very thing around having first mover advantage there, which is quite great. Again, I'll come back to this, the green fuel there. It's very fascinating for me. And as someone who's exposed to the green world, you know, I always find it fascinating when I speak to entrepreneurs who are in this same space as well. Talking about that, then you mentioned CapEx, which was perhaps a big challenge and a barrier. How did you then raise money, especially for CapEx?
Oh my brother, that's one of the reasons why the business took long to take off.
I mean,
being a man from Lesotho, and that was a nightmare, my brother. Yeah. I don't want to lie, it was a nightmare. But I think what I'll say is, like I said, I keep repeating, really, those that seek shall find. Because you know, when you're on the verge to start, you know, there's a point where you just scale down everything to see. How easy can you start? What can I do with what I, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think I was able to get a few investors on board.
Okay.
And at least start at a small scale. I had to part my savings. I had to take bank loans. It wasn't an easy journey, my brother. It wasn't an easy journey at all. Because I think as much as now, when I say it and it sounds amazing that being a first advantage, but that was also another hurdle in terms of legislation, getting people to actually understand what you're doing, you know, getting them to understand the value it's bringing. Those were serious challenges, because when I talk about a tire, I think this is why for the first time you thought it wasn't actually a clean fuel, because that's the first thing that's up in your mind.
Yes, exactly.
When you're bending a tire, it should be, or when you're extracting fuel from a tire, how is that possible?
Yeah.
So you're polluting the environment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the first thing you have in your mind.
Yeah.
But with the process and the chemical process that we're using, and you that's when we start unpacking that. So imagine having to explain that to authorities, you know, them to understand what you're doing. You know what I mean? And it was. I can't even say, I can't tell you how hard that was. I mean, I'm still paying off some of those. we're slowly doing fine. But I'm just saying, I don't want to lie. For me, it was one of the hardest things I had to do in my life. Eh?
Yeah, I'm sure. It's never an easy journey. Someone was saying it's very lonely, the entrepreneurial journey. And unless you've got the heart and the patience and the love for what you do, it can easily go south from there. And it really does go very south. To go up takes time. Really? Takes time to go up, but to go south, it literally takes seconds. And your business is down. Tell me then, I mean, one of the things that you would have had to do is project in your projections when you speak to investors around, this is how much we think we're going to make. This is how much customers we're going to get within the first 6 months, 12 months, 3 years, you know, those type of things. Who was your first customer, and do you even remember that first interaction with them?
No, definitely. Like I said, I'm selling to a refinery in South Africa currently.
Yeah.
One of the independent refineries in South Africa.
Yeah.
My I'd rather humbly choose not to mention them.
Yeah, fine. It's okay.
But I think obviously when you strategize a business canvas,
yeah.
This is how I knew for a start that the business were viable.
Sure.
You know, you first want to do your simple business canvas, and yeah. You want to have three major things.
Yeah.
Raw material.
Yeah.
Process.
Yeah.
And then the. So I think by God's grace, see, this is why it's always important just to do a bit of school before you get into business.
Yes, very important.
It's getting tough because for me, that was the first simple skeleton for me to get into business. So I had to tick those three major boxes.
Mm.
I need to ensure raw materials can suffice. I need to ensure I know where I'm going to get my machinery and does it comply with the quality? Is it what I want? Does it work somewhere? So I actually had to visit other plants that do exactly what I do in South Africa because they are. Then, but obviously, to answer your question, that the last thing was to actually get an offtake agreement.
So
that helped.
Yeah.
So I got an offtake agreement even before I went to sell the product. I already had an offtake agreement.
That's lovely. Yeah.
So that then was a basis of projecting, and that was also a basis of seeing when I'm not making money because I know I'm from my client. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a basis of projecting. Being able to do cash flow focus and actually being able to get investors on board because I mean, how would they believe in something that they don't know? I mean, it's a foreign concept, but I'm like, look, this foreign concept, I have someone buying it.
Yes.
I have someone buying the product.
Yes.
This is the agreement. These are the terms. So if we're able to actually meet the quality, then we will get what we're looking for.
That offtake agreement was your lifesaver, eh?
No, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely was.
Yeah. I mean, that's a de-risking strategy for any investor in any case. So I kind of get where the investor would come from, you know, because you don't want to expend money and this thing won't be bought and all that. So having an offtake, I think, was quite a good one. But tell me about then the difference between what you expected, you know, in a spreadsheet, in projections and all that, and what you had in your mind versus when you're now starting this thing in reality, looking back from 2014. Is there a difference between what you expected and what you're experiencing in business?
I can say to you that I think I never believed this as well when the gurus used to say it, but it's true.
It's true.
I literally didn't get what I expected for a long time. That, like I said, the demographics on the ground, my brother, were so different.
You know?
Took time. Actually, as a matter of fact, I must actually highlight this to you. I worked for a telecommunications company.
Yeah.
So I was actually employed.
Yeah.
While I started my
business. Yeah.
So then I realized that I just need to pull the plug because you know there were certain things that weren't working as they should.
Yeah.
As I had projected.
Yeah.
And now I have investors on my back and I have loans to pay. So you know this is where you always have God.
You're
crazy.
Yeah.
And I must say, a good support system from friends and family. I must really appreciate a lot. My family has been supportive. My friends have been supportive. It's been amazing, you know.
Mm.
So I think those are the pillars because, I mean, look at it this way. I'm a man from Lomé. I'm a man from Lesotho, and I'm here telling someone to create. I'm gonna be recycling tires and creating fuel. The first thought you think that man is good. Easy, you know what I mean? No, I mean, in a rational sense. I mean, like, are you sure this guy's okay?
Yeah, you've gone bananas, as it were.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the only thing is, like I said, it was just have been grounded with God, having the right support system from very close people to me and very close to my heart because they were the ones that would keep you at least in check, and since you'd still reiterate and try again, you know, and try to solve problems, you know, and try to solve them problems with them, and then you know you get in line because without that you lose it all because it's really not as simple as it looked, you know, like I was saying, we reiterate the legislation, the actual process, you know, the challenges that came because actually when we started off. Because, like I said, the idea, the research and development took a long time and raising funds.
Mm-hmm.
But when the project started off, it was about 2021, and COVID hit, and that was another problem.
Yeah,
you know, I know everybody complains about COVID, but it really hit.
Yeah,
you know, shipping costs for machinery went sky high.
Sure,
it was my brother, it's like a joke, you know. Mm. You know when you hear this from people, you think, these people just want to say sweet story. No, you know, the shipping cost went high.
Mm.
It went way beyond what we had projected, you know. But now we've got a plant that's way over half a million and plus. So you know, you just have to budget. You have to like cross check. What am I going to do? You know, am I going to lose this?
Sure.
Am I have to source more funds? You know what I mean? Because that was something that we never projected, because the shipping costs just changed, and they changed while our product was already in transit. So that was another serious problem at the beginning. You know, we get onto the ground, and now you actually have to make the process work. You have to optimize the process.
Mm.
So now the second thing, like I said, it was during COVID. So the suppliers of the machinery couldn't come and train us.
Mm.
And to actually get the machine working.
Mm.
So that means we have to figure it out. You're on a call, and the guys are speaking a different language, because you actually bought a plant from China. So you can't explain something on the phone to someone. You know, you're around and you're seeing other things on the ground, and you're like, how do I fix this one? You know, and they, and then also in the bigger scheme of things, I think I now understand this now. Some of the times manufacturers of machinery don't know the actual problems on the ground. You know, know how the product work, but you are the one that to optimize your process, you know. You're the one that's going to try and make things better, you know what I mean? So it's been very difficult to get that. So, you know, when you're saying the client told you this machine's going to produce this much, and then it's only doing half.
Yeah.
Or even less than half.
Yeah.
Now you have to figure out, what am I not doing right?
Yeah.
And then, but that's why I'm saying, it's from the projections to what was happening on the ground, we made terrible losses for a while.
Yeah.
For a while. Terrible losses, I won't lie.
That's why we talk about family, friends, and fools in business.
I don't want to call them that, because they saved me. I did.
I said it for you, because I felt that's where you're going.
I didn't want to say that, my brother, because they were the. I mean, it's a painful statement, but they are the people that need to pull you down. I mean, not pull you down, but put you and assist you. If it wasn't for their faith and assistance, I mean, it wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work. I mean, because I know, and from an investor perspective, we literally call them fools. But I think they need to change that, those guys. Because those are the people that
really... Nah, that's the truth.
No one did.
No, but the positive side of it, and I know we use this in investment banking, right, a lot of the times. But the truth is that you need fools to actually back you up, because your idea, as you might have also experienced it, you know, to an investor, that's a foolish thing to do. How do you expect to make fuel from tires? This thing just doesn't make sense. And so that's why you need people who are foolish enough to say, I can back up this guy. Because, I mean, let's speak the honest truth. In backing businesses, we're backing the person most of the time, because spreadsheets and all these things are great projections. But in actual fact, that's not what happens on the ground. So as an investor, I have to back you up and believe in you and believe in what you say to me. And that means I am a friend and I'm a fool at the same time. But maybe my foolishness and friendship with you will then bring returns, right? Which is exactly why we call them family, friends, and fools.
No, definitely. Definitely. I fully agree with you, because as a matter of fact, you know, I go to different seminars, and from a humble perspective, you realize that at the beginning of just having a raw idea, there's a lot of work done, you know.
If we were to
discourage people when they have ideas, they wouldn't start businesses, you know.
Exactly.
Because an idea literally isn't really good enough
until
you really have meat to it.
It's
Then the cost of the meat is actually the losses, the on-job training, I mean, doing the things on the ground. But at the same time, if we don't start, we wouldn't get anywhere.
Yeah, so that's true.
That's why I'm just saying, the support system is everything, you know.
Yeah,
so, I mean, you need support from your partner. You need support from, and those are people that are really, really important to keep you alive, until, because at the end of the day, the investors just want to see the numbers. But overall, like you're saying, one of my mentees says, people actually back up the jockey. So that's one of the reasons why I didn't give up.
Yeah,
The people that had invested in my business believed in me as
in
a step home.
Exactly.
You know, and you don't know how you're gonna walk up with your held at high if you lose the money. You know?
That's very true. That's very true.
But on top of that, it's really God as well, being grounded and knowing that you didn't bring me this far to be a fool.
Exactly.
You know, you brought me to actually make an impact. You know, that's where you get back to the drawing board and try again.
Yeah, very, very true. And I know we're running out of time, but I want to now talk about you as an entrepreneur. How has this journey affected your family life? And typically, what does your day look like? What time do you wake up? What time do you go to bed? How is that configured around your family as well? It must be a very difficult thing to manage.
No, definitely, definitely. I don't want to lie. But I think communication overall is the most important thing, you know, when my mother needs me or my father needs me, at least we communicate, because you know a lot of people get into that feeling that they're big shots and then they start not having family, and that's where you lose it. So I think that for me is the most important thing, the communication, still sparing type of family. But but a day is really different. Depending on whether we have emergencies rather or I think that's when things would change drastically. But I think now things are stabilizing. Because now I'm having a normal work day where obviously my reports start having time to do other adventures that interested in, because basically in a production line, so the system is just the standard system, you know, once my people got the hang of the system, it doesn't literally always need me to be there, you know what I mean. I just always check that everything's running smoothly. And then the biggest challenge was in the beginning when we were still trialing things, when you have to be up at 3 a.m every day, when you have to make sure the plant is running properly. That was really, really, really frustrating. But I think by God's grace, with also standardizing processes, I think one of the biggest things is entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And we think it's a dummy approach, but it really works.
Yeah.
Write them down.
Yeah.
Write the process. You know, so that everybody can just read the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, so when someone is off, so some of the times as leaders, we hoard everything to ourselves.
Yes.
So that then doesn't allow the business to work without you, you know, because now you always have to be there, and you are the one that knows everything. Mm-hmm. You know? So that's the problem, you know. So I think doing that for me has alleviated so much stress from me, because I have a process outlined, I have a checklist that I have a production line that I need to check. Okay, production process is done. Then we check quality. So my physical presence, I think even in the long run, is going to, especially in the business and that I'm in, might not be necessary anymore. Because with those checklists, I think that's how actually conglomerates actually grow. I realize that as well. But it was quite difficult, because it has been my baby. You know, I suffered for it. I've been suffering for it. It's been quite difficult to actually get that isolated in that. But I think, like I'm saying, the biggest and that I think worked well is actually getting the document, getting everything documented, getting the process documented.
Yeah,
that helps so much.
It's that concept of working in your business and working on your business. You know, processes help you to work on your business and not to be in your business, as it were. Now, as a round down on this one, how would you do things differently if you look at the past few years in business? What is the one thing that you think, if given the chance, start all over again, what would you do differently?
Oh, that's actually a difficult question, but you know that now that you said that question, I don't think I'd want to have done anything.
Yeah, lovely. That's lovely.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Honestly, because I think this is where I mentioned this in the beginning, that saying that to you, that you only see God's hand looking back. You know, and there's been many opportunities that I've got funding earlier on in my life, but maybe I wasn't ready. Maybe I wasn't with the right partner. Maybe, you know, there were so many other attributes to it that when I and do a proper self introspection, I'm like, God, this was your hand. This was the way it should have gone. You know, I ended up going to corporate at some point. You know, because I ended up on the business. I'm like, this thing's gonna happen. this thing is for white people, this thing.
Yeah.
It's not happening. You know what I mean? Honestly, yeah, it's yeah. not happening.
But sure.
later on, you realize that that was actually where, obviously, my professionalism was
yes,
tuned.
You know? Yes.
The whole analogy of doing things differently.
That yeah.
I wouldn't have done it the same way if I hadn't gone through the things I went through, you know. So I when I actually look back, I don't think I would have chosen any different path. I think this worked well.
Yeah, definitely blessed, my brother. There are a lot of people that are living life, doing things that they regret and finding themselves just getting by in life. And you having the privilege to do something that you look back at and like, nah, if there was anything to change, I wouldn't change anything. And then where is the company going from now? Say 10 years from now, you spoke about conglomerate. I'm like, that's where you're going and that is achievable.
No, my brother, obviously, we really thank God. You know, I was actually reiterating this the other day, and I'm saying it's really God's grace. You know, it's really God's grace that you actually wake up to do something that you really love, yeah. that you're fulfilled. And even when challenges come, yeah. you know, you face them with a smile because they're your challenges. You know? So I think it's really just God's grace. I don't even want to take any credit for that because getting to that point was such a nightmare to actually get that going. You know, when you wake in the morning and saying, okay, I'm just going to do this and you're excited. It's really God's grace. But I think in the bigger scheme of things, what we would want to do obviously is not only focus on currently what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then we would want to be a fully fledged, renewable energy
lovely,
company,
lovely.
And then follow suit into other forms of renewable energy.
Lovely.
You know, we have and Lesotho, we have, and then there's Seoul and other countries, and then there's a lot of other prospects of growth. But I think there's also hydrogen as well. We have a
yeah.
lot of water this side. So,
yeah.
I think the most important thing is just always focus on one thing, master it, and get it to work.
Yeah.
And then try to other spaces and actually. Even in the waste space, there's actually still other types of waste that
Definitely.
Can be used. There's biomass. There's so many other Definitely. Things that can be. But I think we just wanted to focus on one and then try and start jotting the dots into other industries, or even replicate what we're currently doing in other countries. So I think the dream is still a bit scattered on that end, but. But the biggest thing that we obviously want to do is just be a fully fledged renewable energy company.
Sure.
With focus on other different industries, not only in recycling of tires and to fuel.
Sure, lovely. What would you say to other entrepreneurs out there starting businesses or even aspiring entrepreneurs as well? What would be your message to them?
No, I think I'll just basically say he that seeks shall find. And if you keep seeking, God will give you what you're looking for. And I think despite that, I think I came across a very interesting verse just a few days ago. And I think that empowered me so much. And I think that's a parting verse I can give to someone. It's Daniel 12 verse 3. It says, those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the heavens.
Yeah.
And those who many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever.
Sure.
So I think once we realize what we're doing, we're doing greater than us and we're doing it for God, it humbles you. You never think you're anybody else. And you know, you get all this applause, but you just remember that I'm doing this and I'm doing God's work when I do this. I'm actually doing what I should do. You know, the amen is always something has to be greater than you. But I must say it's hard, but you really on your side to actually go for that dream and don't give up but I think also keep reinventing the wheel, you know, because it's so important to reinvent the wheel, because what you initially start with is not what you don't have all the information. You know, just keep trying to also learn from the people that have done the stuff, because that's helps to learn.
Sure.
I think that's what I can say, my brother.
Beautiful, my brother. Thank you. And I still need to have conversations. So really appreciate your time this evening. And may God continue to bless you and your company as well. I'm sure we're going to check in with you 10 years from now and like, hey, that conglomerate, now we're talking. Thank you so much, my brother. I appreciate your time. All right.
Thank you so much.
Have a good one.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.